Making chicken salad this week is brought to you by Three Count Pro Wrestling Academy. Are you in Brisbane and thought about learning to be a wrestler? Well, here's your chance. Three Count Pro Wrestling Academy are based out of Beenleigh in Queensland, and they're committed to teaching the best, safest way to learn the art of professional wrestling. Hit up their Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or email admin@threecountfitness.com now to register your interest, and we thank them so much for supporting the show.
You can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit. People is as people does, that's all there is to it. Put a square peg in a round hole, just never seems to fit. And you can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit.
Welcome to Making Chicken Salad, the Wrestle Radio Australia podcast, where we talk all things international wrestling. Today we've got a very special episode because just over the past week we've had AEW Grand Slam. 4 hours of massive pay-per-view quality AEW shows broadcast live on TV on Dynamite and Rampage from New York. So we couldn't help but get on here and talk about them. So joining me, as always, best manager ever, Todd Eastman. Todd, how you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. I'm a bit sleepy, but I'm fine. Thank you.
Finally got you up.
Yeah, I know. Sorry about that.
No, you're all good, mate.
I was at Venom Pro Wrestling last night for people that are listening to this. So I'm a bit dusty this morning.
And I hear that you were a bit mean to Wayne. So I got a revenge for Wayne today on the podcast. Is anytime I'm giving you shit, it's for Wayne.
I was appropriately disciplinarian to Wayne.
Sure.
For
sure.
His actions.
Sure, you were fine.
Before we get started though, mate, I just want to say, over the last couple of episodes, you've done a great job in hosting the show. So thank you very much for doing that, mate.
No, I appreciate it, man. Thank you for letting me be on the feed to host it. And, you know, but saying nice things won't get you any credits when we start later in the
show.
I'll tell you that. Yeah, that's exactly right. So let's get straight into it. Dynamite and Rampage, both Grand Slam events. And, I mean, let's start with what they started with, Brian and Omega. Kicking off the show on AEW Dynamite, going to a 30-minute time limit draw. The reaction to this match has been huge. Meltzer's given it 5 stars. It's Daniel Bryan's first Meltzer 5-star match. I thought it was fantastic. I thought that it's a great finish that keeps both of them hot because you don't want to have Omega losing to a new guy, but you also don't necessarily want Brian to beat him because then straight away you need to move that into a title feud. Whereas at the moment, we know that they're on a similar level. We think Brian can beat Omega, but we don't know for sure that there's going to be that rematch. What did you think of it, Todd?
Yeah, well, Omega also put a tweet out afterwards just going, doing the whole Rocky line, ain't going to be no rematch. So I loved it. I thought it was a great match. It's very shocking to me that was the first time Bryan Danielson ever got a 5-star.
Especially That's wild, from, isn't it?
Especially from someone who they named their best technical wrestler award after. You would think that's... and especially like the matches he had in WWE. Some of those matches were amazing. So I was like...
Absolutely incredible.
It really leans into knowing where Meltzer's bias is when you see
that's
that
exactly
sort of
right.
But as for like that, you talked about the finish and all that, I honestly think that they screwed up their time cues on that finish, because if you notice, it was like after the bell when he locked in the label lock. I think that was supposed to be locked in about 10 seconds before.
And you think the bell was supposed to go during the label lock?
Yeah, 100%. I 100% think that because that would have mean that he had him in the lock. The bell rings. He thinks he's won the match where he hasn't, because it's a time old, like time limit draw, like thing.
And I thought that was where they might go with it. Like when the 1 minute announcement or whatever it was came through on the speakers, I was like, oh, Brian's going to lock in the little bell lock and then the bell will ring. I actually liked that they were just trading strikes when the bell went, because it meant that from Omega's perspective, Brian didn't even have the upper hand when the match was over. And from Brian's perspective, if he had an extra minute on the clock, he would have locked in the label lock.
Yeah.
So I love that there's both sides to it. I think it was really good. But more importantly, that whole match, the back and forth was fantastic. Massive impact. I thought both guys were doing absolutely excellent work. We saw Danielson come back with the, you know, I've got five and all of that great. I thought it was an absolutely ripping match start to finish, regardless of the ending.
Yeah. Do you know what I would have loved though, is that they were trading off and the bell goes and they just keep trading and keep trading a treat to the point where the locker room empties and that's what splits them up. So there's no real, like, nobody got the upper hand at all. Like, he didn't get that LaBelle lock in. He didn't, like, the didn't hit the one winged angel. All of that deal, you were still not seeing it. So you still could have kept teasing it. Like, Omega could have said, you never got it on me. And Danielson's like, well, you never hit me with this. You know what I mean? That's something I might have, if it was me with the pencil, what I mean, like, I just want you guys to keep trying. Like, one of my favorite things to see trading off was, and this is very old, well, not very old school, but old school-ish, was Greg the Hammer Valentine and Ronnie Garvin had a feud in WWF. And when they traded off punches, it was amazing because everything looked crisp and it just looked like two guys that were that mad at each other. They were just throwing bones. And if I'd have seen that for the end, like if you're like a flurry of punches to each other and then ding, 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 and they're still going and the refs trying to break it up. And next thing you know, all the refs come out to try and split them up. And then like some of the click has to come out and break them up and all of that sort of stuff. And then it's like, you've got a real, like they can go to break while they're emptying out the ring.
Yep.
So when they come back, so, like, what a wild scene. Cannot wait to see a rematch. Unbelievable.
Definitely. But I think that the way they went, see, if they went that way, then you've got to go to rematch, right? Mm. Whereas
well, the not way really, that because they, he can still say, you didn't beat me. Mm. Move on. Like Omega can. And then Brian's got a real thing where like, well, you didn't beat me either, man. And then they've got that ongoing niggle.
I agree, but I personally am hoping that they actually split Brian and Omega for a little while after this. And they keep reminding us of the fact that Omega couldn't beat Brian, couldn't put him away in the half hour. But I'll tell you what I would love to see. And this is, I was reading up in the NWA rule book, the classic one. Mate and I were doing it. Yeah, no, it was fantastic. But we were looking at, you know, just these old school rules. And one of them was about title defense. So, you know, how you can't lose your title on a count out. You can't lose your title on a disqualification. According to the old NWA rules, and this is something I would love to see Kenny Omega do. If there's a 2 out of 3 falls match and it goes to time, then the title doesn't change hands. Even if there was only one fall and it was the challenger winning it. Let's do that. Let's have a 2 out of 3 falls match with a 1 hour time limit where Brian locks in the LaBelle lock at 59 minutes, gets the tap. He's got one pinfall. The 1 hour time limit rings. Brian's the only person with a point on the board, but Omega goes, no, you didn't win the 2 out of 3 falls match. I've still got the belt.
That's
a finish I want to say.
That is a really good finish. But the hard thing about that is they're not the NWA.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It would have to be like the AWA rules state. And then everyone would be like, no one's ever seen the AWA rules. How are we ever supposed to? But see, those
anyway, that's just me.
Those, like a question, because being that you read the rule book.
Yeah.
In those NWA rules, was it over the top rope and disqualification?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. I just wondered. I wondered if it still was.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading an old version of the rules to see, you know, classic rules. So I don't know if it's been updated since then. But moving on from that.
For a while there, even in like WCW, when Bill Watts took over, he changed some
Cowboy,
of the rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. He changed some of those where like you couldn't do a move off the top rope.
And also, if you purposely threw your opponent over the top rope, you were disqualified.
That's
aiming for intentional harm. But if it was not intentional and you accidentally sent them over the top, that was fine. And then they were doing dusty finishes with it. And...
Yeah. You went over with them or, yeah, it was, yeah.
But through the middle's fine. And
yeah, it's fine.
Bizarre. Anyway, so after the Brian Omega match, which, by the way, if you're listening or watching to this podcast and you haven't seen Brian Omega, you can come back and catch this podcast later. You should go watch that match. After that, we had CM Punk cut a promo on Team Taz, obviously with a match against Powerhouse Hobbs set for Rampage, which led into MJF versus Brian Pillman. I thought putting a promo there to let MJF and Pillman have a minute so they didn't have to immediately follow Brian Omega was probably a good call. And, you know, a Punk promo is a Punk promo. I don't care at this point because
wow. Punk's Bloom came off the rose very quick there.
Very, very quick. And like, I still think he's a good promo, but I don't care if he's cutting a promo for a match against Powerhouse Hobbs that he's going to have on TV in 5 days' time. You know what I mean? If he's building to a match with a big name star at a big event, great. But cutting a 5 minute promo on Powerhouse Hobbs, whatever, I don't care. Your thoughts?
Well, see, the whole idea is to try and raise Powerhouse Hobbs' name up a bit there. So I'm guessing from your like that from your perspective is telling me that that's not working.
I love Hobbs and I've loved Hobbs for a long time. Like I love a no nonsense powerhouse. I like what Team Taz is doing, but I don't think having him lose to Punk is gonna do that for me. And like, yeah, we'll get to it. And like, yeah, it was a competitive match, but I don't think that, you know, everyone in AEW has competitive matches. There's not a lot of squashes.
So unless it's YouTube. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, I'm not watching YouTube because if it's on YouTube, that means that it matters less than Santana and Ortiz and the Lucha Brothers versus Hardy Family Office. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if it matters less than that, I'm not going to go out of my way to watch it.
It's funny you say that because I had a discussion with a guy online. Because they were like, why are you always critical of AEW? And I literally said, because I pay for everything I watch for AEW. I'm not like, I'm from Australia. And in Australia, we pay to watch Dynamite. We pay to watch Rampage. So I feel entitled to be able to go, well, this is what I didn't like about it because I'm paying for this. And if I continue to not like things, I'm going to not pay for them anymore.
Yep.
And it's exactly right. That's the thing. And
that means that if Dynamite and Rampage are a premium product, I expect that to be the best content that they've got.
Yes. Right? And, but also too, I listened to something the other day. It's something I'm going to start listening to more. It's this guy, he does, it's called WrestleNomics. I don't know if you've heard of it.
But no, sounds like me.
He's Brandon Thurston's his name. And he goes through all the ratings and everything of the shows and explains the numbers and why they're doing this sort of thing. And then I only caught a real small glimpse of this. And he was almost saying that Dynamite need to have some bad shows. So when they have the good shows, people are going to know that this was a good show. If they keep having constantly good shows and then they have the one bad show, that's when
it looks like a disaster rather than the good shows looking like good shows.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I was like, that's an interesting take.
Yeah. Anyway, MJF Pillman. I love MJF. I will not stop talking about how I think he's the best heel in wrestling today. I think he's absolutely superb. Pillman, I don't mind Brian Pillman Jr. I think he's a good young wrestler. He's got a great look. He's obviously got the name working for him. But yeah, I thought this match was a good showcase for MJF being an asshole. What was your thoughts on it?
You're exactly right with that. My only other thing was is like it did nothing for Brian Pillman Jr. The lead up and then the actual thing, the way they led it up was like MJF constantly shitting on Pillman and Pillman never really getting the upper hand on him, never really getting to like beat on him and or get his hands on him. So you would think that the way that they did that, the final match would have been Pillman finally getting his like revenge and MJF finally getting his comeuppance, which really makes no sense in the way that the storyline was going because like,
right. And like, I think that MJF can get his comeuppance and still win. You know what I mean? Because he is a heel. He is a douchebag. And if he gets the tar beaten out of him all match and gets like properly embarrassed and made to pay for the things that he said. And then at the last minute, he grabs a squirrel hold and he, you know, throws Julia Hart in the way of a move and then, you know, does some dastardly stuff to end up winning. Then he can still win while Pillman gets to put the beat down on him. I think that it was a bit more of a back and forth than it maybe should have been if we want Pillman to look good at this point. But I do think MJF winning is the right call, because who does MJF lose to? I can't think of... I know that he lost to Jericho once out of their 60-something matches, right? Mm-hmm. But other than that, like, MJF doesn't really lose to people.
Mm.
And I think he lost to, you know, Cody once. So I'm really happy for MJF to be staying, you know, be one of the big fish. And here's, I don't think it hurts Pillman to lose, but I think it hurts Pillman to not get in good offense.
Here's the thing, right? You said, like, MJF never loses. Like, he never loses in matches. But those lead-ups with Jericho was beating the shit out of him left, right, and center before the matches. Like, he got his head put in a fucking toilet.
That's true.
And he, like, copped a swirly off bloody Jericho. So he did all that. With this Pillman thing, he didn't. It was always like, I'm going to call your mother a meth head. I'm going to talk to your dad in hell, which was like, it was all great material. So don't get
great
me wrong.
I'm
not at all like shitting on that. But Pillman never got his hands on him. Every time he did, he got cut off and got beaten, which is fine if at the end of that, you're going to put that baby face over. Because it's sort of
I wonder if, and maybe this is just because I like MJF so much that this is my hope. I wonder if we're going to go more long-term where MJF is awful to good young guys and then beats them continually for a few months. And then someone steps up to put the bully in his place. So it's possible that there's something more long-term going on, but yeah, I would have liked to have seen Pillman get a little bit of revenge.
Well, going along that lines, who would you pick as that guy to put the bully in his place? When you're thinking of young talent in AEW, because like you could say a Dante Martin, but when Dante's brother is back, they'll go back to doing their tags.
It's the same guy that I say every time. It's the same guy that I say every time. It's the guy who I think is going to be world champion in 3 years. It's Jungle Boy.
Mm. Okay. I can see that. The Jungle Boy is sort of like, they're sort of pointing him towards Adam Cole. I mean, like, they've got a match next week on Dynamite. So.
And if that takes a month to pay off, then that's a month where MJF can ruin another young guy and be a bully. You know, and that then... Number three, you know, do your rule of three. Number three is Jungle Boy, who goes, no, we're not going to take this, and beats him.
My only argument or my only roadblock in that is promos. Like, Jungle Boy can barely string a few words together in a promo, which, like, it hurts him. And I think they're really sort of leading slowly towards Christian turning on him.
Yeah, I think so. But I also think that the way you get Jungle Boy to learn to do promos is to put him up against someone like MJF and have MJF talk through, all right, here's what... Because I genuinely think, even though MJF's so young, he cuts promos like he's been doing it for 30 years.
He probably
like
has.
The guy knows. Yeah, exactly, right? He knows what he's doing. And I think that you need to put someone like Jungle Boy in a position where he needs to cut promos, and he needs to cut good promos. And he's got the people there supporting him to cut good promos. But looking at him in the ring, it's the one thing he doesn't have yet to make a world champion.
And it's promos. Really strange because... Like, he got his dad's looks. He just didn't get his dad's, like, ability to speak.
I know. It's bizarre. But he's got the look. His in-ring is incredible. The gimmick is fun. Yeah, I just...
If we can get Jungle girlfriend.
If we can get Jungle Boy practicing those mic skills with people who are good on the mic, he's a world champion. It's done. Mm. It's done and dusted.
Yeah.
No, you know, I think
don't disagree
I think MJF and Jungle Boy is the future of the world championship scene in AEW. So that's our feelings on MJF and Pillman. Moving on to something that we'll we'll have a little bit to talk about here. Yeah, settle in, folks. Cody Rhodes versus Malakai Black. Okay, I'll cover a few things first because I know you've got a big rant coming, Tom. Mm-hmm. So here's my thoughts. Number one, I love everything Tommy End does. I can watch that man wrestle for hours on end. Brilliant. There's little touches that I loved. I loved him hitting the, I'm going to call it Black Mass. I can't remember what the kick's called now, but hitting his finish. Cody gets belted so hard he falls out of the ring. Black immediately shoots out of the ring, tries to pick him up to put him back in for the cover, but he's dead weight. Can't lift him. Goes back in to try to wait for the count out. Great work. Absolutely fantastic. There's a couple of things that I hated. One, we made Arn Anderson look like an old idiot. There was no reason for him to try to go around the ring post on the apron, which he fell down doing, and then had to get back up in order to get hit by Cody running the ropes. Dumb, unnecessary, totally stupid. We don't need Arn doing that. Brandy's back, and Brandy's getting in the ring and giving Black the finger for no reason, and I don't understand why. The thing that absolutely incensed me, and I could barely focus on the rest of the match once it happened, right, is there was a pinning exchange where Cody was pinning, air quotes, Malakai Black, with Black's shoulders on Cody's thighs, and the ref was counting it. It absolutely sent me. I could not stand it. It was, you know, they did that thing where one rolls the other up and they flip it into rolling the other one up. And Black's head was on the mat, but his shoulders were on Cody's thighs. Don't count it, ref.
No, exactly.
That just sent me mental.
Sometimes I think the refs in AEW just do exactly what the wrestlers are telling to do and not their actual jobs.
Yeah.
And it's something that, like, poor Jimmy Corderas gets ripped over because they go after him going, you're so anti-AEW, blah, blah, blah. He's just calling it because he's a 20-year referee veteran. Like, he's refereed stuff like Undertaker and Edge. Like, he knows what he's talking about. And when he says stuff like, why are they doing this? They shouldn't be counting it. Like, you're ruining the integrity of a referee when you do this sort of thing. He's dead on. Like, a referee is supposed to call a match as they see it down the middle. Like, this is a side note, right? Last night, I had a match where I managed my guy Tiamat against Alex Shepard. Now, there was a spot in the match where Alex was supposed to be hanging over the ropes and Tiamat distracts the ref and I slap Alex. Tiamat forgot to distract the ref and the ref's looking at me. So I'm just looking dead at Shep and, like, not moving my lips, but just going, I can't hit you, he's looking right at us. I can't hit you, he's looking right at us. Because if I had, that referee would have to disqualify me because he's seen it, like, flat out seen me, like, interfere in the match. The whole idea of it is for them to not see because that enrages the fans and yada, yada, yada. If I had just slapped him and just gone, that's not the spot, you can't disqualify me, that ruins that referee's credibility straight away. And just like you said, when you're counting pins where shoulders aren't on the mat, that ruins the referee's integrity. I love the thing where you see a referee doing that whole, you can't see it if you're listening to his podcast.
Pushing the hand under the shoulder.
Yeah, and telling him his shoulders aren't down, I'm not counting it. And then having him move that way. That, to me, that looks like a contest. That's a contest. Because a referee saying, I'm car counter, it's not a legal pin. That's not a legal pin. But yes, to go with your point, that's exactly, I agree with you completely.
So that was my biggest bugbear in the match. And the finish came when we had Malakai Black spit black mist into the eyes of Cody Rhodes while the referee was distracted and roll him up for the pin. Take it away, Todd.
My notes for this, and you've seen my notes because I actually put them in our rundown because I couldn't get a thing up quickly, is literally like, fucking Brandy, silly and made Arn look like a fool. So it's basically exactly. There was no reason for her to slide into that ring, mimic him doing the cross legs, giving him the double fingers without him getting up and kicking the shit off her, like kicking her head off her shoulders. There was that completely ruined. Well, not didn't ruin, but it, like, hurts his mystique. It hurts his gimmick. when she goes in and mocks him like that, when it's not, she had no part in this match. He was never going to get her. Like, you know, I hate to break kayfabe here, guys, but it's planned. There was never a planned spot where he is eventually going to kick her. So why would you do this spot? And just to give her a bit of shine. Literally, when she walked out at that start, I went, oh, because I knew that some silly shit was going to happen. Because it always does. There's always one point in a Cody Rhodes match when Brandy is ringside where she has to make it about her. And
you want to hear my controversial thought here, Todd?
What's that, my friend?
I think that Brandy might be the best heel manager that they've got right now, because Cody is doing an excellent job as a heel, and I think Brandy is getting us all riled up and angry at her and Cody. And honestly, if you look at the way that this match went, number one, everyone loves Black. Everyone loves watching him work. But the match was set out as if Cody was the heel. And not only that, he's coming out in Homelander cosplay, which is a character from The Boys, which is a direct reference to a guy who is acting like the good guy, thinks he's the good guy, but is very clearly the bad guy. And I think that the story they're telling right now is Cody might be the top heel in the company right now.
It just baffles me. It just, and the whole thing with Arn, I'm like, why is he getting up on the apron right now in this part of the match? And then why is he like, if you're going to, I don't know. I honestly don't know if that bump was intentional, him falling off.
If the bump was intentional for him to fall off, then why did he get back up and take another bump?
That's what I'm saying. I'm thinking maybe he got up on the wrong side of the ring and he's like, oh shit, I'm on the wrong side of the ring here. I better move over. Yeah.
I actually noticed Cody point to the side of the ring that he needed to be on.
Okay.
It seems like Arn's gotten up on the wrong side of the ring. Cody's pointed to where he needs to be. Arn's decided instead of getting down and getting back up, he's going to go around the ring post.
He's
couldn't quite get around.
He's a bit too girthy for that now.
That's right. I thought it would have been a great match if not for a couple of really, really dumb things.
Mm.
And it's really cemented in my mind that Cody's working heel.
And look, the problem here for me is that Arn Anderson is my favorite wrestler. And I hate what they're doing to him because they're making him look like a bumbling old fool. Like he has never once helped. The only time he ever helped in a match was, and I'm thinking here, Shawn Spears.
Yep.
That's how long ago. He hit the spine buster.
And like the best spine buster ever from a man that age.
Yeah. But
I don't know why. Like, look, I love the brain busters, but I don't think he's doing anything.
No,
other than being an extra manager there, so that Cody's coming out with multiple managers, which is a great heel move.
But it's like if you're gonna be a heel, don't be a Shades of Grey heel. Just come out and heel it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
anyway,
just do it. Don't have celebrity friends.
That's it.
That come out and help you. You know that's what I mean? It's like just do it. Just be a heel.
FTR versus Darby Allin and Sting. Number one, man, Darby Allin can move. Love seeing that guy go. FTR are such a good tag team. Cannot speak anytime they are in a tag match. It's excellent. But the headline for this match was that Sting is working his ass off. And that man is older than wood. Like, it is amazing that Sting can still go. I don't necessarily want to see him wrestle the way he's wrestling, because I'm constantly thinking of how fragile he is. I'm not wanting him to hit the other guy. I'm wanting him to tag out so that he doesn't hurt himself, which is not what you want from your face. But I think that obviously when you've got opponents like FTR, it makes it easy to have a good match because those guys could get a good tag team match out of a broom. But I think it was really cool to see Sting be the highlight of a match on offense.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a great coffin drop at the end. We're getting that thing FTR do that I love where they grab each other's hands while one of them is in a submission. Love it. Yeah. Cool match. What did you reckon?
Yeah. That to me cemented in my mind what I've known for a long time. That is FTR are the best tag team in the world because you can put them in with anybody, any style, any way, and they will get a good match out of it. Like, I don't remember seeing a bad match from those guys. They took a dude with Sting and made him look like he was 20 years younger because they planned everything like, this is what you'll do here. This is what we can do here. We'll set this up here. You'll stop from the Stinger Splash and then hit me into a chair so you're not taking any real, like, punishment. That the biggest thing I was worried about with Sting's first thing was he was with Brian Cage. And Brian Cage has a tendency to just muscle somebody around because he can. It doesn't really mean anything to him. And for someone who I think is as fragile as Sting might be, that worried the hell out of me. But to see him in the ring with, and unfortunately he can't do it all the time because it's a like tag team FTR sort of deal. That's who he needs to be facing. That's who Sting needs to be facing on the regular. Guys that are savvy veterans who will get the best out of what he make, they can accentuate his strengths and hide his weaknesses. And that's what FTR do with every tag team they face. And like, I seriously think they're being misused somewhat in AEW.
I love that. And you're absolutely right. We call them savvy veterans. Do you know how old Dax and Wheeler are?
Yeah, they're not. They just look.
They're like 30 and 34.
Yeah.
It's like they've been doing it for decades. They are so good.
Yeah, so I've been a fan of Dax since his nickname was the Mechanic in NXT.
Yep.
Because again, Arn Anderson is my favorite wrestler. As soon as I saw him, I said, "That's young Arn Anderson."
Yeah,
and I've always loved his work. And then when he joined with Cash or Dash, or whatever he wants to be called now, that was like, that's a perfect fit of a tag team. And that was, and it shows, like, they are hands down my favorite tag team to watch in wrestling today. Like, modern wrestling, I will watch them versus everybody because they can have an amazing match against the Lucha Bros. They can have an amazing match against the Bucks. They can take on a team like Darby and Sting and make them look great because that's what their job is, to make other teams look great. And
they do it every time.
Yeah, and it's just, it's a shame.
Even when they win, they make the other team look great.
Exactly. They make the team like, it makes them look like, and they do exactly what old tag teams used to, all brilliant tag teams like the Rock and Rolls, not so much the Rock and Rolls because the Rock and Rolls were faces, but Midnight Express, Arn and Tully, they make them look like there's no way these guys are going to beat this strong face tag team because look at them, they're beating the shit out of them and they pull the victory out by some means of distraction or that because they are just that. They're as good as the guys, but they're willing to cheat to win.
That's it.
And that's what I love. I love that tag team. FTR for me, best tag team in the world.
What is it? Win if you can, lose if you must, but always cheat. Perfect. Yes. All right. And final match, the main event, was a women's title match between Britt Baker and Ruby Soho. Personally, a little bit disappointed. Expected more. I've got a feeling that you've got the same feeling here, Todd.
Yeah, it was. It's strange because I know it sounds sexist, but I really, most times I don't expect a hell of a lot out of some of the women matches on AEW, just because I don't rate a lot of the women workers in that thing. It's not that I don't rate women workers. Anyone who knows me knows that my favorite wrestler in Australia currently is Jessica Troy. So it's like, it's not like I don't like women wrestlers. And I was really looking forward to this because after the six man and all that, like, Ruby is really going to help this division by lifting it up. But that match just wasn't it for me. I didn't feel like it hit the way Rosa and Britt did. Like, Rosa and Britt was a great match.
Absolutely. It was a great match. And, I do want to talk about the women quickly because you're absolutely right. I do feel like, and let's quickly touch on the women's match that was on Rampage here and do, you know, two in one hit. It was Penelope Ford and Anna Jay. Penelope Ford winning off distraction from Allie on the outside. Allie, the bunny, sorry.
Yeah.
Keep calling her Allie. The bunny distracted the ref through brass knuckles in. Brass knuckles were used and then got the pinfall. The save was made by Ty Conti after a beatdown at the end. which turned into a bit of a brawl, and then Dark Order came out. Dark Order's reuniting. Maybe they're not actually reuniting. Yeah, and I'm just continually disappointed by the women's matches, and also it seems like the women's matches are filling the women's match slot on an AEW card, because there's one every show, no matter what. We get one. If you look at SmackDown this past week, which we'll talk about soon, SmackDown had two women's matches and two women's in-ring segments in a two-hour show, right? And on a two-hour Rampage, we got one women's match, which ended in a way that is progressing a men's storyline.
Yeah, because that match on Rampage just looked like the chance to get everybody on TV.
Yeah.
In the end of that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's let's get out Best Friends and, or not Best Friends, but Orange Cassidy and Chris Statlander and Dark Order.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it looked like.
Yeah. So I'm not thrilled about the state of women's matches on AEW. I've said it before. I'll keep saying it. Especially when you've got so many women on the indies who will go and work, right?
Mm.
Well, Layla Hirsch is there.
Yeah, you got,
you know what I mean?
You got Thunder Rosa.
You've got Thunder Rosa. You've got Layla Hirsch. You've got, look at all the people. Like, let's just go back a couple of weeks when we talked about NWA Empower. What an excellent, excellent show that was. That shows if you want to grab women from the indies and put on a show, there is a massive number of them.
Mm. Just not Chelsea Green.
Well,
I'm sorry. I just like, I don't know if I did. I show you that clip that I saw. And I took
a video. I don't think of it. So.
I will show it to you. And it's a spot where like she's trading off with Allison Kay, and she does rapid punches that look like they were supposed to hit her in the boob, but they were missing her by this much. And it was like 10 of them in a row. I'm like, and she wonders why she got released.
Yeah, that's it. But like, why is Serena Deeb not on show? Deeb is an AEW talent. Oh, she's injured.
Yeah, she's injured at the moment. Yeah, because that would have been like, my argument as well, but I knew she was injured.
There you go. See, there's the answer I didn't know. But like, why isn't Diamante on shows?
Mm.
Like, there's so many women that you could just grab. You know, I know that Kylie Rae left, so maybe that's maybe that shows the backstage for the women. They're not getting what they, and she left early on in AEW. Yeah. When AEW was saying we're going to have a big women's division, so
I think Kylie Rae deals with like mental issues, unfortunately.
Yeah,
that's what it seems, because she went there, then she went to Impact, and then she left Impact because of that same thing, and now she's with NWA, I think it is.
I think she's independent and she's working with NWA.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think she's contracted there. But
before that, like, she left AEW, then retired, then came back for Impact, then left that, and then...
But this is what we're saying. There's so many women out there who are doing things.
Yeah.
So
There are plenty.
Why are we only getting two matches?
There is plenty of women's talent out there. It's just a matter of, like, using them more. Like, I don't... And this might sound terrible, I don't believe anything that Riho does.
No.
Is it Ito? Ito?
Maki Ito?
Yes, I like her. I think she's great. I think
Get me started, Todd. Yeah. Don't get me started on Maki. Love her.
But yeah, I think she's great. And she should be figured in a little bit more. And then you've got Nyla Rose, which is their version of Nia Jax. And it's like... There's a lot of women there that can put on decent matches. Nyla Rose probably needs to do the same thing that Nia Jax does, that's look after her opponent a bit more. But there's plenty of talent there, and it surprises me because I thought that Kenny Omega was supposedly leading or in charge of this women's division. So I would have thought that it would be a bit more...
But he's also come on record to say that he hopes that they get more TV time. So clearly he's not making the decisions there. But like, yeah, for me, when Jamie Hayter is standing on the outside of the ring to manage someone, that is an absolute indictment. Why is Jamie Hayter not wrestling?
It seems ridiculous. I like Anna Jay. I think Anna Jay's got a lot of potential.
Yep.
But I think Penelope Ford is probably better standing on the outside watching a match. than she is.
I would love to see Penelope Ford get better. I would love to see her get the opportunities. I don't want Penelope Ford to be part of the only women's match on a 2-hour card.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. And that's the thing too. Like, you've got what's Anna Jay's friend's name? The Brazilian girl.
Ty Conti.
Ty Conti is one of those ones, is one of the very, in my opinion, the very rare few that got cut from WWE in that, like that level that got cut from WWE, that was a missed opportunity for them.
Ty Conti from the start when she was in, because she was in one of the Mae Young Classics, and I thought she was absolutely, like, for how green she was, really, really good.
Yeah.
And had the look and had the moves, and yeah, I think that there's a lot of potential there. But again, the way you work on that potential is by having a couple of women's matches on the show, and they just don't. And part of that's this overbloated men's roster that we keep talking about. They've got too many people that they're trying to cram onto TV, and the result is that they're just not doing things.
But that's the thing. Like, they cut her, and I think with the same class that they cut her, they cut Nemeth, they cut what's the other guy, the Brazilian dude, the big dude? He's part of the Wingmen as well.
I can't remember.
Yeah, that guy. Those two, they don't, where they are right now is probably where they are.
Yeah.
And they would never get any, like, higher.
Conti's ceiling seems to be much higher.
But Conti is one that they definitely missed out on. Like, if anyone says to me, oh, you missed out on Ryan Nemeth, I'm like, no, you're just not seeing. Like, he's Dolph Ziggler if Dolph Ziggler just decided not to really work on what he was doing.
Yep. Bingo. All right. So that's us talking about Dynamite. We're both a little bit disappointed with Britt versus Ruby. We should mention Britt did win that match, coming off a distraction, locking in the lockjaw as the finish and getting the tap out.
It wasn't a shit match. It just wasn't.
No, it was an okay match, but I think we both expected more.
Yeah. I don't want them to hang their head on going, we had our biggest Dynamite ever and we had ladies as the main event. They said, no, that kind of, like, that was almost a write-off match at the end, because
and it was put there because you can't send the fans home on a non-finish of Brian Omega.
No. Well, and also the way that it was structured was because for TV time in America, the first hour of a show, there's not that
you get
many,
less ad breaks.
You get less ad breaks. So they didn't want to have an ad break during the Danielson Omega, because otherwise that would have been what ended the show.
Yeah.
So that's
exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's Dynamite. Let's go through Rampage with a bit more pace because we have spent a long time on this.
Yes.
So CM Punk beating Powerhouse Hobbs. I thought the match was fine. You know,
gave Hobbs a lot of offense.
He did. And I thought Hobbs looked really good. But it was kind of what I expected it to be.
And CM Punk back in trunks.
Back in trunks. I hate it. I think.
Wow.
Why is he bowing to the pressure of these fans who are complaining just because they're attached to what they remember from 10 years ago? The pants looked great.
Do you know what? Like, I had a discussion with one of the boys about it, and I think it was the fact that he didn't want to look. I think he was a bit self-conscious about his legs for that first match, and maybe look a little bit bigger. And when you're against Darby Allin, you don't want to look as skinny as Darby Allin. So he wore with Hobbs, there was no worries about that because Hobbs is a massive dude. You could just wear the trunks. Yeah, you can wear the trunks and you're fine. But yeah, I thought it was really good.
It felt to me like bowing to the pressure of the fans who saw pants and went, that's not the CM Punk I know.
Yeah. I thought Punk nearly killed himself on that runner off the top rope. It looked like he just dropped like a rock. And so I think he maybe has to watch it that. But it was a good match. But it was just
a good match.
It was a TV match. It was a good match.
And it's showing that that ring rust is coming off Punk quick.
Mm.
I think there was a bit of... A little bit of rust in the first match with Darby, but in a couple of matches time, he is going to be back at full Punk.
Mm. But what does it say about him when, like, half the crowd were chanting send Hook for the whole match?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, it's come off the rose, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Super Click versus Jurassic Express and Christian Cage. Super Click with the win in this one, building towards, as we said earlier, Jungle Boy versus,
Adam Cole.
I thought the match was good. It's a typical six-man match with the Bucks in it. Lots of chaos. Christian Cage can still go. It always amazes me the move set that he's got. I think he's really crisp. I think he's really good, especially for how long he's been doing it. I think he looks great. But again, this is a six-man chaos match.
Yeah, it's a PWG reunion show, pretty much.
Yep. That was. I love Jungle Boy. I can't get enough of him. But, you know, that match is what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you take away this next match and tell us what you think before I start complaining. Men of the Year versus Chris Jericho and Jake Hager. What do you reckon?
I thought it was great because it meant that Chris Jericho wasn't on commentary. So there's an up. There's a chicken salad for you, mate.
You say wearing your Lionheart shirt.
Because this is old Chris Jericho. I didn't hate it. Because I think Men of the Year are there to be what they're there to be. They're just there to be a workman tag team that helps other tag teams get over. And so, like, they're one of those guys that talk their way, like they let Dan Lebert talk their way into getting their asses kicked. And it's obviously leading to more things because of the way the finish was. So, and like, then the other upside is like, I don't know, but maybe we're going to get Jorge Masvidal in AEW for a match. It's a bit disappointing that match will probably be against Chris Jericho, but it's still cool to see. Chris Jericho's
safe hands, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly what it'd be. You can't put him in there with Jake Hager. As much as Jake Hager's got MMA experience, you just can't. You can't do that. It surprises me very much that if it does happen.
Sorry, I will talk about the finish just so everyone who didn't watch knows what we're talking about. After the match, Lambert was on the outside celebrating. Jericho and Hager brought him in. We're going to beat him up. Members of America's Top Team just started flooding out of the crowd. Junior Dos Santos, Paig Van Zandt.
Slowly walking out of the crowd.
Slowly walking out of the crowd.
I was like, Jesus Christ, how long are you going to leave him in the ring?
Get there, boys. Junior Dos Santos, Paig Van Zandt, Austin Vanderford, Andre Arlovsky, Dalton Roster, Jorge Masvidal. Surrounding the ring, they get in, they beat up on Jericho and Hager. Paige Van Zandt works Jericho's guts over with some punches, and then Masvidal hits a running knee to Jericho's head.
I don't know. Like,
so that's the big finish there.
I don't know if they were worked punches or not, but Orlovsky and Hager's trade-off was great. I was like, I don't know, because I was watching it going, I don't know if they worked or not, but if they're not, he's really good at that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I'm going to have my winch.
Have your winch. Go for it, mate, because I know how much that you like and you like to do this, so go for it. It's good that it's you for a change than me.
I'm done with Jericho. I'm done with him. I don't care anymore, right? I respect him as one of the greatest of all time. I do not need to see this flabby old man work a tag match with Jake Hager against Men of the Year. I don't care. You can't make me care. Honestly, I don't care about Masvidal. I don't care about Paige Van Zandt because I'm here for wrestling, so I don't follow all of the shoot fight stuff, right? I'm here for the storylines of professional wrestling, so all of those people I don't care about. And Chris Jericho, I find boring to watch. He wasn't boring 20 years ago. He was incredible 20 years ago. It's not 20 years ago. I don't want to see Chris Jericho work. I don't like Hager. I just don't like him as a person. I find him boring to watch. Look, Men of the Year are perfectly fine at what they do. You're exactly right. They're there to be a mid-card tag team who gets other people looking good. I like that they gave them the win. It makes them look, you know, like a good team. So when someone beats them, it's something important. But I don't care. I don't need to see all of these 20-something unshowered men singing Judas when Jericho comes to the ring. I'm done with it. I'm done. I don't want to see it anymore.
You're starting to sound like me. Jesus. Sorry about this, people.
You're infecting me, Todd.
He used to be so happy.
All right. So let's move on to something else that I thought was probably a waste of time, but one that I liked. So this was the Hardy Family Office versus what I've dubbed the Laxa Brothers, because it's LAX and the Lucha Brothers. So Santana and Ortiz and the Lucha Brothers beating the Hardy Family Office, which was made of Private Party and Butcher and Blade.
Yes.
So Private Party and Butcher and Blade versus Santana and Ortiz and Lucha Brothers. And it was exactly what it sounds like. It was absolute chaos. basically done under Lucha rules. So people were just going in and out of the match as they saw fit. Man, Santana and Ortiz and the Lucha Brothers have just been working together for so long at such a high level that they just perform. It's absolutely excellent to see. I love Private Party. I think Butcher and Blade are a really good base as a tag team. So I thought that it was a fun, if meaningless, match. The big story coming out of it was that Matt Hardy is, big money Matt Hardy is obsessed with cutting people's hair now. So he was trying to cut the hair off a member of LAX when Orange Cassidy made the save. Matt Hardy's obsessed with getting Orange Cassidy to shave his head. So he has made a match between Orange Cassidy and not Angelico, Jack Evans, a hair versus hair match that Jack Evans was not prepared to be entered into, but he's going to. So a hair versus hair match set, Orange Cassidy and Jack Evans. That should be good. I like Jack Evans. I think people forget how long Jack Evans has been doing those flips for. If you go back to Wrestling Society X, he'd be doing been doing them for a long time then, and that was a decade and a half ago. So I got a lot of respect for Jack Evans. I got a lot of time for him. But again, I thought this match was fun, but nothing important. What did you think, Todd?
Well, I think Jack Evans is Botchamania's favorite wrestler, just from the stuff he's done in AEW has been very patchy at best. Do you know what I mean?
He's been doing a lot of ridiculous flippy stuff, and he's not a young man anymore.
Yeah. Look, I'm just going to say right now, I hated it. For the fact, I didn't hate the match. Let's just right out there. I didn't hate the match because the match was what it was always going to be, very luchery, very flippy, blah, blah, blah. What I didn't like was you've got supposedly two of your biggest shows in AEW's TV history, and you've got your tag team champions in a nothing eight-man tag. Because really, what was on the line there? There was nothing on the line there except for just the two teams that want to beat each other. If that had ended, if that had ended somehow instead of leading off to a stupid mid-card hair versus hair match with a guy that wasn't involved in the match and another guy that wasn't involved in the match, and instead broke down to say something happened to the finish there where the Hardy team went over and Lucha Bros and Santana and Ortiz got into a pull apart. That to me, that would have been money. Because I'd like to see Santana Ortiz, Lucha Bros for the tag team titles. And that's where I think they're eventually going. I just think they could have got there then quite easily by doing that. That's my only, but I didn't mind the match. I just thought that was where I would have.
Out of curiosity, Todd, when do you reckon Jack Evans debuted? Put you on the spot here. What would your guess be?
I'm trying to think because I remember watching him back in ROH days with Generation Next. So it would be early 90s.
It was 2000 he debuted. So he's been wrestling for 21 years. He's 39 years old. It's easy to look at him and go, oh, young flippy guy. The dude's been doing it for over 20 years.
I knew. I'm terrible with years now because as old as I am, I still think that 2000 wasn't too long ago.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But yeah, the dude's almost 40. So I understand why he's working a little bit sloppy when he's trying to do flips all the time.
Mm. Anyway. So that's the thing though. Like if that's happening, then eliminate that out of your game.
Yeah.
And go to something else. I had this discussion last night this discussion last night with Tiamat, the guy that I manage. I was like, if you can't do it 100% of the time, because he did a move where he sort of botched it on the show, and he's like, I just had I'd done it so many times in practice and it was fine. And I was like, that's because you hadn't wrestled for 15 minutes beforehand. So if you're not confident you can do this all the time, just eliminate that from your game until you are confident that in 15 minutes time of full on wrestling, you can still get up there and pull off this move. Then by all means, use it. It's much better to not try something that you don't know that you're going to pull off than take the crowd out of it for a second. Cause that's what happens.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
All right, we've talked about Penelope Ford beating Anna Jay, leading to a beatdown. Dark Order coming out, looking like they're reuniting, not reuniting.
Okay. Where do you think this is leading? When, like, honestly, is it going to be like Wyatt comes in and reunites them, or is it going to be Paige that comes back and reunites them, or are they just going to be split off? Or
it's got to be building to, I think, a big feel good Paige is back reunited spot. That's where I think it's going. But look, I wouldn't mind. I think it's also possible that we get half of them led by Wyatt as a heel team and the other half as a face team. But I don't know.
If you're going that way, you would think by, in my mind, process of elimination, Wyndham would have like Evil Uno, Stu, and that's sort of like a downgrade from the original Wyatt family, if you know what I mean. Like, going from a Brody Lee being his like henchman to an Evil Uno being his henchman is a bit of a drop. And that's nothing against Uno. It's just is what it is.
No, but Brody Lee was the guy who was leading Dark Order.
Yeah.
So he was leading the guy who was the leader. You know, it is a downgrade.
For the longest time, I just think they're sleeping so much on Silver. Silver could come out and do Silver's some really great good. Stuff. He is so good, so entertaining. Like, I don't know if he'll ever be a main event guy, but like that mid-level to upper card, like not comedy, but funny face that everyone loves. Like, I love the dude. And you know me, I'm generally like very serious about like the characters I like. I like serious characters. I love him. He just makes me laugh. He entertains me, and it makes me want to see him more. Especially when they do that, he does that thing where he
and keeps it means yelling. That when he's doing serious stuff, you care about it.
Yeah, it's when he does that thing. There's a whole thing on YouTube of him yelling Anna, and it's just like there's somebody who's cut together every time he's made Anna Jay break during like being the elites. Just be like Anna, 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 Anna. He'll do that in one take, and you see her like this going. Like that, they come back up. I love him.
Fantastic.
It still makes me so mad when they did that elimination match that they didn't put them over the Bucks, at least one of the Bucks, in that elimination match.
That was, and I don't watch a lot of Being the Elite, but I do. If I see a new one go up, I scan through for his bit.
Yeah,
because it's always fantastic. He's going around drunk at the moment. He picked up. I can't remember who it was, but they were drinking some kind of yellow energy drink, and he picked it up. He goes, "Is that drinking pee pee?" And had pee, like, yeah. And it's so silly, but he's just grabbing it with both hands and getting into it and getting stuck in, and it makes it fun. Anyway, that was the end of the official stuff on AEW Dark, because sorry, AEW Rampage. After that, they had. I'm thinking of how dark it was when they turned the lights out.
I was just saying, like, somebody tells me what you thought of the show as a whole.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So they turned the lights out, and then they turned the lights back on to have an unsanctioned match between Eddie Kingston and John Moxley versus Lance Archer and Minoru Suzuki. We got to hear Suzuki's theme music. Thank God. People aren't going to complain about that. The match was dominated by Archer and Suzuki. Until Homicide came out, freed Moxley, who had his hands duct taped behind his back. Moxley hit the paradigm shift onto Suzuki, onto a chair. Kingston beat the tar out of Archer, put him in a garbage can, and then wailed on it with a kendo stick to get the win for Kingston and Moxley. What did you think of this one, Toddy?
It was what it was. Do you know what I didn't like? The only thing I didn't like about it was the camera angles. Like that last bit where he's got him in the garbage can and he's hitting it with
you
the,
and your
the
camera angles, Tom.
Well, because they give it away, they gave it away. Like he was hitting this garbage can with the kendo stick repeatedly, and they cut to an angle where you could see the stick going nowhere near where Archer was in the bin. And Archer's pretty much like, you can't see me if you're not watching this on YouTube, but Archer's pretty much hands over him, like tucked into the garbage bin, protecting himself, and it's hitting him like above where his head was. If the camera angle been from the other side, you wouldn't have seen any of that. It would have just looked like you were hitting the guy when it was in the can.
Exactly.
That's my only like thing about it. And also, your baby faces, you're in jeopardy. You shouldn't have someone come in and save you.
Yep. And I don't care about homicide either.
No, and I don't really remember, but the crowd really go that.
Didn't know who he was.
Yeah. But also, too, you've got to think, and I'm going to give AEW a bit of a break here on this one. That's at the end of a four-hour taping.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's a good
point. They'd watch 4 hours of stuff coming into that. So my one of my chicken salads for this week was going to be that crowd because they sat it out for the whole 4 hours and were pretty loud for most of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that, look, we've got a couple more AEW stories to cover, but now that we've covered the two big shows from Grand Slam, I think we can, we'll head to a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about some more news. We'll talk about what's going in WWE and what's going on around the wrestling world. So stick around.
My hand, you will rise from the ashes of this world.
On Saturday, October 9th. The best in Queensland pro wrestling returns. As Pro Wrestling League presents Revolution 3. Check their Facebook for details.
So, speaking of AEW Grand Slam, the ratings have come in 1.2 million for Dynamite, which is, it's a good rating. It's not a great rating, which when you've got a match like Omega versus Danielson, I think that's probably not what they were hoping for. Is that, you got the same feeling there, Todd?
Look, they, and I put this up on our Instagram account now, our Twitter. 1.2 mil for that show is, I don't think they're popping champagne in the AEW offices at the moment. Because even me, and you know how, like, I'm very, like, critical of AEW just because I like good wrestling and I see how much potential they have. And it annoys me that, in my opinion, they're not hitting that potential of what they can do. Last show we talked about, I was saying if they don't hit 1.5, 1.4, 1.3 area, that's a miscue in my opinion, because of how much promotion they put into this show and how much they stocked. That was a pay-per-view quality.
Yeah, it was.
That was a pay-per-view quality show. And if you can only draw 1.2 mil for that, when the show after All Out, The Dynamite after All Out, outdrew that, outrated that show. So
you don't want anything outrating a show that. I can't imagine who was watching the one after All Out but wasn't watching the one with Danielson and Omega. That, yeah, it seems bizarre that that's happened, you know.
And also they because the thing that the crutch that they always lean on was the demo was always very strong. They didn't beat Raw in the demo either. Like the demo was, and it was only 0.01. So like you give them a break on that. They pretty much tied with that thing. But that Raw was only really, it was like one led by one match. And they drew 1.7, I think it was.
But this shows, and this is my feeling, is that if you appeal to the minorities who don't feel represented in wrestling, it pays in ratings. And what we saw is Big E getting the belt is paying in ratings because there are black folks in America who feel like they are being represented on WWE and they are tuning in.
And they're not necessarily being represented all that strongly in AEW at the moment. But no, it's also too, like, AEW go to that core, hardcore, independent wrestling base. And there is only so many of those in the country. And like it was made to seem like this show was, and it was a massive show. They sold out Arthur Ashe Stadium. That was 20,000. If those 20,000 had just stayed home and watched the show, maybe the ratings might have been a bit better. But it was made to seem like when you look at Twitter, when you look at like your Facebook algorithms go towards those wrestling like groups and all that, that every man and his dog was so excited for this show, then why was the rating so so low for it.
Exactly.
And then you're like, oh, well, we have to wait for the DVR numbers to come in, and then that's the way. Well, you never say that before. Every other time it's like, this is great, this is awesome, we love this. Now it's like, oh no, it's the DVR. It's like, stop qualifying. Like, it wasn't great. That is not a great number. Like, to me, for that show, that should have been a 1.4. Like, that should have been their highest rated show ever.
Ever.
Straight up. Stop. Yeah, straight up. You've got Bryan Danielson in his debut match against Kenny Omega. There is no bigger match at the moment, aside from maybe Omega and Punk, or even like Danielson Punk. There is no bigger match you can put on an AEW show than those two guys. And I was talking about like Andy Coyne from MCW and Deathmatch Down Under.
That's Lord Andy Coyne. Thank you very much. Lord Andy
Coyne. Sorry about that. He was commenting on it as well on our Instagram. And there's something that I'm interested in too. I want to see the quarter hour breakdowns to see what that match in particular rated. And how they did, the ratings dropped off after that match, just to see why it skewed to 1.2. So maybe there was 1.4, 1.5 watching for the Omega Thing match. You go, oh, we've seen that, let's turn off now. Which, like, for the actual match was great because you put them on first, so there was no commercial breaks. But I don't know how much that might have hurt the rest of that show.
Yeah, exactly. So a couple of other things going on in AEW. Ricky Starks has replaced Mark Henry on the Rampage commentary team. I thought Ricky Starks was quite fun on commentary. The matchup with Taz was pretty goofy, pretty entertaining. I was saying before, I'm not a huge Mark Henry fan. I think that he needs work at what he's doing. He's very robotic at the moment. So hopefully with Ricky Starks there, it gives Mark Henry a chance to improve before he comes back to do more of that. That's my hope. What are you thinking?
Let Ricky Starks wrestle.
Yeah,
that's my point. Like, he's a young, active wrestler. Why are you putting him in the commentary booth?
And it's that thing of, you know, it's a shame where when people are good, they get the jobs that other people can't do.
Yeah.
And not the job that they should be doing. I'd love to see Ricky Starks wrestling as well.
I know that from experience. But if seriously, like if you were going to replace anyone, I would have replaced Jericho. Because Jericho, to me, makes me not want to listen to the commentary on those shows.
My hope is that Jericho's just not going to be on that booth very often.
Mm. Put Punk there instead. So then Punk doesn't have to wrestle every week.
Fantastic at it. That's a great idea, actually.
Put Punk anytime there.
Punk got on the commentary desk, it was gold. I think that's a great idea.
If anything, like when he did that commentary with Jericho, he shut Jericho up for a good portion of that show and made it more listenable. I find it like nails on a chalkboard listening to Jericho yelling all the time. Yep. And then like,
agree.
Like one second he's a baby face, the next second he's a heel, one second he's like in commentary. It's like, make your mind up when you want to be and go with it. Don't do one and stop fucking yelling.
Amen. So Dynamite will be moving to TBS next year. Rampage is staying on TNT, but Dynamite will be heading to TBS. And the rumors going around is it's going to be a TBS women's title as kind of a secondary women's title. I hate that because if you want to put more women on the shows, put more women on the shows. Don't make another belt that you then feel like you have to have segments to support, which is just another ticking the box for the women rather than actually writing women's segments.
And if you're going to do it,
makes me grumpy.
If you're going to do it, make it a tag title.
Yep.
Make it a women's tag title. But it's like, originally it was going to be both shows were going to move to TBS, but now it's like Rampage is staying on TNT. I don't know if that's reflective on their ratings or if it's just a time slot sort of thing. They like it where it is, or maybe they can get them a more advantageous like time spot now that I don't know. And just like, I want points there for saying the word advantageous.
Well done.
Thank you.
Lots of syllables in that one, Todd.
Thank you. But I know also like the Bucks in that this morning, I think I saw it on their new bio that they want trios titles. So I don't know if that's going to, and that's just been a rumored thing for a while. But I don't know if
that's going to be true. Yeah, I'd love to see trios titles, but just because I love Death Triangle so much. I want to see Death Triangle constantly. Moving away from AEW, let's talk about what's been going on in WWE at the moment. Yes. We've got a draft coming up between SmackDown and Raw. And as part of that approaching, a lot of what we've seen has actually been some inter-brand events. So our last couple of main events, we've had New Day versus the Brotherhood, and we've had a triple threat with Lashley, Reigns, and Big E. That was a great match, I thought. Reigns coming out on top shows that Lashley has really been a bit of a sleeper great worker lately. I thought that he actually did a really good job with the belt, and having him in that triple threat match be really good, I thought, you know, proved that again. Reigns is still the top dog in the company. And I think, you know, doing this inter-brand stuff in the lead up to the draft has been interesting. Do you agree?
Yeah. Yeah. Like it, that match, that triple threat made me want to see Reigns and Lashley, and also made me want to see Reigns and Big E, and also Big E and Lashley in singles matches. Like at different points.
Big and that's men, what you want out of that match.
Big meaty men slapping meat.
Slapping meat. That's right.
And that's, yeah. And that, like, that tells you right there, just the size of those three guys tells you the disparity between them and the AEW product. The AEW product is a lot more of the smaller type dudes, where these guys are like, they are what WWE want. They are larger than life characters.
All right, let's run through the Extreme Rules card, which is coming up. Let's run bottom to top. So we got Liv Morgan versus Carmella. We've got a SmackDown tag. Which way do you think that's going, Liv Morgan, Carmella?
I hope Liv. I also hope Liv. I like Liv.
I like Liv a lot.
I don't like that they're making like Tony Storm just like a garnish. A throwaway. Yeah, garnish at the moment to a match, but I like Liv Morgan. I want to see her do more.
I think Liv Morgan is seen as, you know, the old diva style, and I don't think she is. I think she works really hard, and she's really quite good. So I hope Liv...
Carmella is the old diva style.
That's right. SmackDown Tag Championship match, the Usos versus the Street Profits. I love the Street Profits. I don't see the Usos losing this one. I think that the Brotherhood is too big.
That's going to be the sleeper match of the show, I think.
Yeah, I think it could be absolutely fantastic.
Especially if you watched SmackDown this week with the match with Roman and what's his name? The CEO one from Street Profits.
Can't remember the name at the moment, but really good match.
That shows me that dude has got a massive future. Like he can be somebody like in the future, because he had
absolutely
hung with Roman. Kept up the intensity, kept up the crowd work, kept up. He was such a good showcase for his abilities, that SmackDown. So, yeah, that's really good. To me, sleeper of the show, that one.
United States Championship match, Damian Priest versus Sheamus versus Jeff Hardy. I've got Priest for this one. They are building Priest really well. I think this is him with a couple of older guys to show that he can hang, that he is part of that upper echelon.
Yep, totally agree. You put him in there with a high flyer like Hardy and also a powerhouse like Sheamus, and you come out on top because he's that mix of both, really. It shows that's one thing that they are doing right. As much as we give WWE hell about how they present certain people like Bearcat.
That's not on our rundown. How are you feeling about Bearcat as the new nickname?
Do you know, if it's paying tribute to Bearcat Wright, I love it. Because if, like, for people that don't know, Bearcat Wright was the first ever black world champion. So if they're doing it and they've like asked him if he wants to do this, because this, I love that idea. I love paying tribute to someone from the past like that. But
I actually didn't know that. So there you go. That's actually really cool. I didn't say, so if you're not sure, Keith Lee got Bearcat as a new name.
Yeah, Bearcat Keith Lee. But yeah, that's like Bearcat Wright was the original first ever black world champion. So if they've
done that case, I've completely changed my tune. That's awesome. I love it.
Okay. But yeah, that's if they're doing it because of that, I love it. So there you go. But the one thing that they have done really well is pushing Damian Priest. Because obviously they see like main event status in him in the future. So they're doing something. Then they're actually doing it right, which you can't say that about a lot of the things that they're doing when it comes to building young talent, like a Ricochet, like numerous people.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. They've dropped the ball a lot of times. So to see them not drop the ball is really good.
It's refreshing.
We've got, yeah, that's exactly right. We've got a SmackDown Women's World Championship match. I think this is obviously one that a lot of people are very hyped for. Bianca Belair trying to regain the title against Becky Lynch. I've got a feeling that Lynch is going to win. It's not what I want. I think Belair really showed that she is the goods over the past 6 months or so. And I don't love the way Becky retook the title. I know we spoke about that on the pod, but I think that they are going to keep it on Becky.
But it's almost like you're really anticipating this match because you want to see him face off. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So
it's almost like they did the right thing at SummerSlam then.
Yeah. We've also got a Raw Women's Championship match. That's Charlotte Flair versus Alexa Bliss. I mean, this is we're just bumping Flair's numbers, right?
Yeah.
So maybe we get Bliss winning so that Flair can win it back later, but I think Flair takes this one.
Yeah, I think Flair. I like the worst part is I like Alexa Bliss as a worker. I think she's a really good worker. I'm not a fan of what they're doing with
not
this
into
character.
This gimmick.
No, no. Like she's like my wife even said the other day, she's watching it, she goes, so she stole Bray Wyatt's gimmick and then Bray got fired. I'm like, that's pretty much, that's an accurate assumption. Yes.
Yep. That's about what happened. Yeah. And then we've got the main event is Universal Champion Roman Reigns defending against the Demon Finn Balor. I think Finn wins. And the reason I think that is that, and I said it last week, I think if you bring the Demon back and the Demon doesn't win, you're wasting all of our time. And I know WWE does like to waste our time, but I don't think they would bring the Demon back just to lose after all this time. I don't necessarily know if it's a clean win. I think Lesnar is probably involved to build for... And that's the thing. Roman Reigns is so good. I don't think anyone touches him at the moment in terms of performance. So it would make sense to leave the championship on him. But because he is performing so well, you don't need the championship because he is going to claim to be the head of the table no matter what. And you can have people try to say, you're not as good as you think you are. I'm going to beat it out of you. And he shuts them down. And then it builds up to him potentially regaining the title at WrestleMania. I think it goes the way of the Demon with an assist from Lesnar.
I don't. I think Reigns goes over for the mere fact of I don't think Lesnar will help Finn Balor win because Lesnar wants the belt. He's been very clear about that. Like, I want, like, give me a title shot. So why would he?
In that case, maybe the Demon loses because of Brock interference, because Brock needs Reigns to win so that he can get the belt.
Yeah,
that would be interesting.
Yeah, that might happen. But unfortunately, I don't see the Demon winning. Like, it would be cool because I don't know what's happening with this draft. Like, for all we know, they could send, like, Lashley to SmackDown and Roman to Raw to try and bolster the Raw numbers. And then maybe you could have, if that's the case, then you could have the like Demon versus Lashley. And that would be a fresh matchup. And it's sort of like, well, not the Demon, but Finn Balor, you know what I'm talking about.
And are you talking about versus Big E for the WWE title?
Yeah. Yeah. Just coming in, going after that. Because I don't want to see E lose. And that's the thing too. Like, I'm surprised that they haven't got Lashley and E on here.
Yeah, me too.
That does surprise me because you would think you would try and capitalize on the momentum Big E has at the moment. But then again, do you want to job Lashley out straight away? Yeah. It's a thing.
Yeah. All right. Let's go away from the big two and talk about some news that's happening. Or actually, let's not leave WWE just yet. Andrew Yang, a political figure in the US, has tweeted out that he's come out of a meeting with some officials and said, if you are from WWE, and you feel like you were an employee there and not just a contractor, come talk to me. We got a lawsuit going. Let's go. Great. The fact that there's not a union for these wrestlers yet is ridiculous. I know that that's, you know, I never shut up about this kind of stuff, but wrestlers need to be compensated for what they're doing. They need to be supported. They are not independent contractors. If they are signed onto a place and they can't work anywhere else, they're not independent contractors. And I'm really glad to see, you know, some big name political power getting in on this.
Mm.
What's your feeling, Todd?
I totally agree with that. I don't think you should just limit it to WWE. It should be all of professional wrestling. I know you're singling out WWE because it's the big fish, but it should be all, because like AEW don't give people healthcare. They don't.
No, that's right.
Like they give the Bucks, Omega, like anyone who works in the staff, they get healthcare. Those, everyone else, like Ricky Starks, MJF, they do not. As much as like people will want you to believe that they do, they don't, because they looked into it and they saw how much it was going to cost. And it's the exact same reason why the WWE didn't do it. They should be doing it. I totally agree. They should be looking after these guys, because at the end of the day, these guys are their money. And the whole idea about you just, the whole CM Punk thing, we're just a cog, you break, you replace it with another cog, I think is a silly, silly idea. As much as it's true, it's silly. It shouldn't be the case. We should be supporting these guys. I know that the WWE at least do support, well, like if you're injured, they do pay for their injuries, like pay for their rehab if they're on staff or if they're in, because I don't think that, I know, I'm pretty sure, I'm not sure, to be honest with you, that Brian and all that paid for their rehabs with all of that sort of stuff. And I know that they offer rehab to, like, if you have a drug dependency problem or a substance abuse problem, they pay for rehab for that. And that's whether you're a part of the company or you've been a part of the company. If you have an issue, you can go to them and say, I want to go.
But again, that's seen as something that they're doing out of the goodness of their heart. Whereas,
but it's not, they should, you know, just be doing it.
They should be doing it.
I'm not too sure about the whole, they should be doing it once you've left the company. I think once you've left the company, you've left. It's not like I can hurt my back now and go back to my company like 10 years ago when I worked in a printing press and go, oh, I've hurt my back. Can you guys pay for this? Because
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not too sure about that, which that I think is really nice. And now since the whole Daphne thing, they offer mental health care, which is great. That's amazing. As much shit as we can talk about it, and I'm sure that AEW do the same. I would like to think they do the same thing. That they're offering mental health, like care and having them talk to people. So that is good. But the whole Andrew Yang thing, I hope that something happens where they do it. I'm not all that confident that it's not just bluster, because Andrew Yang says a lot of stuff and never follows through. I mean, Andrew Yang thought he was going to be the Labor secretary.
And he never got that spot.
And then he ran for the mayor of New York and didn't win that. So it's sort
in
of like,
saying that, this feels pretty open and shut. So maybe, he's gone for something that he knows he can get. So let's see.
I'm be interested to see how many people contacted him.
Yeah,
and who they were. Who they were is probably more important to me.
Yes, I think
if it's not just people with access to grind and it's with actual legitimate claims.
Yeah, it's not going to be nails in the steroid case.
No.
Okay, let's talk about MLW, because Fightland is going to premiere on Vice, and it's premiering with a huge champ versus champ match. National Openweight Champion Alex Hammerstone versus the undefeated World Heavyweight Champion Jacob Fatu. Can't wait. Cannot wait. This is an old school match right here. This reminds me of when you see Hammerstone and Fatu in a ring, it's like we're seeing Hogan versus Junkyard Dog.
Mm.
Like, this is going to be wicked. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's a whole, because I watched their debut Fusion show, the new show. I don't know if you've watched it yet.
But it I was haven't like, gotten to it, no.
Oh, it was so good, because it was, there was a Texas Bunkhouse Brawl, I think it was, with the Von Erichs and another team I can't remember off the top of my head right now. Really good match. And then you just had a couple of cruiserweights going at it. It was a really good match. Main event, was Davey Richards, TJP.
Oh.
Great. And then in between that, they've also got, also it was Team Lawler and the fire exit and stuff.
Right.
But in between that, you've also got Dario Cueto from Lucha Underground with the
They're building towards that Azteca Underground.
Yeah.
I've got one of my all-time favorite workers, Matt Cross, is over in MLW. So there's so much.
You'll love the open then, because Dario Cueto does a whole little promo. This is a backstage promo, and then Matt Cross walks up to him, and they have a little back and forth, and Matt Cross is like, "You're not going to pull the same bullshit you pulled last time," and then walks off. I'm like, "Oh, that's so good."
I know what I'm watching when we're done.
Yeah. So for people at home, that's free on YouTube. Just look up MLW and those shows are free on YouTube. So yeah, but just leading to this Viceland, and that's good. That's massive, because their leading is Dark Side of the Ring.
Yeah, that's right. And as well as that, they've got a four-way for the middleweight championship. That's Myron Reed, Ares, Aramis, and Tajiri.
Yeah.
That's going to be a belter.
If you haven't seen Myron Reed, really good worker, really good worker. And
I love Aramis.
I didn't talk about it before too, but Jacob Fatu, Hammerstone, these are two guys that really, it's amazing that they're there. They should probably be somewhere else. I think it's the Fatu hasn't exactly got the most clean criminal record. That's why he never been signed. So, and that's what I hear anyway. That's why he hasn't been signed by WWE. Because you would think he would be amazing as a muscle guy for Roman Reigns in Bloodline. Someone like that, just point destroy.
What? Hammerstone is he looks like he came from 80s WWE.
Do you know what
it's
he looks
insane.
Like? He looks like if Shane Douglas really worked out.
Yeah, he does. I love Hammerstone. I think he's awesome. But yeah, no, that's going to be an absolute
belter. That is a huge show or huge match for them to debut that first show in. And I can't wait to. Probably will have to find surreptitious ways to watch that show, but I will find them and I will watch it. I will watch it hard.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and we'll have to cover that on the show, because I'll definitely be watching it. Yeah, that card. Wow. I will really quickly address before we get to Chicken Salad, Chicken Shit. That's debatable. Todd did win this one. Barely. It was close.
True and just.
You know, and I want to, just give a big shout out to all the wrestlers who didn't want to piss off promoters when they voted for you on that one.
You know, it's an anonymous vote, right? So that's fine. It's not like people put their names on things. Stop trying to qualify your losses, sir.
Oh, I'll qualify Todd. Okay. I'll qualify it all I like. That's wrestling, right?
It's all heels. Right. That's heels. You're not a heel. I'm the heel.
What's your chicken shit this week, Todd?
Again, camera work. AEW camera work. Please stop giving away stuff. I know, and I don't know why, because y'all have been doing this for years. Bruce Mitchell has been doing this from Nitro days. You should know to not cut when a guy's got his head underneath the bloody apron like Aleister Black had. Or what's his name now? Malachi Black.
Malachi Black.
You should know not to do that, because you're giving away stuff. Don't give away the farm. And if somebody's got an angle where you can see they're clearly not hitting someone, don't show that angle. Especially when it's when you're doing a rampage, when it's a tape show and you can edit that shit, edit that shit. It's as simple as that. It just really, really annoys me. And also the whole Arn Anderson thing, that cuts to me my quick, because I love Arn. Stop making him look like a bumbling old fool, because he's not.
Yeah, fully agree.
One of your chicken shit, sir.
All right. This is a chicken salad disguised as a chicken shit.
Oh.
Right? You know how we were talking before about how AEW is not putting good women's matches on TV? They're just ticking the box.
Yep.
AEW Dark had Big Swole versus Alley Catch. Why is that not on the big show? Swole is money. Alley Catch is great. Give us this match on TV. Why are you making these good matches and sticking them on Dark where no one can see them? I'm absolutely sick of it. I really just want these really great performers to get an opportunity to shine, and they're not. I'm really tired of it.
Sorry, did you watch that match at all? I'm just curious.
Went out of my way to watch it because I love baseball.
Was it in the studio, the new studio? What's it like? Because I haven't seen it. So what's the setup like for that?
It feels like, do you remember NXT right when the network started, where there's like, you know, four rows of fans?
Was it like WCW worldwide sort of deal?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. That's what I think. I've seen photos. I just haven't watched the show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it's small. It feels like everyone who's there is really into it, which is good. But
does it feel like developmental?
Yes. Yeah, it does. And which is ridiculous because the people they've got on it don't feel developmental. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it was.
But then that's the way AEW, that's the way NXT started.
It had like LAX versus Chaos Project. You know what I mean? And like Serpentico knows what he's doing. Santana and Ortiz know what they're doing. Like that's not a developmental.
Then there's Luther.
And then Luther is also there.
Hi, I'm Chris's friend.
Anyway, chicken salad for this week. Todd, take it away.
It's got to be Brian Omega.
Yeah, that's mine too.
Such a good match.
How can it not be?
Again, like I said before, FTR, they're my favorite tag team in the world. I like you, like your Lucha Bros. FTR are the style I love in wrestling. Good storytelling, believable action. Believable storytelling, like inventive, like in the way they invent their ways to cheat, and they take from the legends, and they, do you know what I mean? They take all the best bits from the different legends of the past, like the Midnights and Arn and Tully, and I love that. That to me is rare, and that's why they're so fucking good at what they do, and it, like
they are, they're incredible.
I want them to be the tag champions. I just do. I do, because it doesn't matter who they're up against. That to me, that right there, they're a team that the championships are made for, because whoever is in that match with them are going to look good. Yeah. They can work with every style, and there's not a lot of guys, single or tag, that can do that. This is probably the ultimate compliment to Dax and Cash. They are the Bret Harts of tag team wrestling, because they can work anyone.
I have a couple of comfort matches that, like, if I'm, you know, just done for the day, had a big day, want to turn my brain off and watch something, there's a couple of comfort matches that I have. One is Toyota versus Hokuto from Destiny 95. I think that's probably my favorite match of all time. And another couple of matches that I just turn my brain off and watch because I love them is the 2 out of 3 falls American Alpha versus DIY. And American Alpha versus what were FTR called again?
The Revival,
and as well DIY versus Revival. Those matches are unbelievable because Dax and Cash are so good, and I can watch those matches a million times, and I never get tired of them. Yeah. Because they're telling a story. It's absolutely fantastic. But yeah, I don't know how we can, you know, have this week without our chicken salad being that great 30-minute non-stop belter between Omega and Danielson. It's just the best that we had.
It's that you talk about, like, your comfort matches. Like, for me, and it was something, because I was having this discussion with the Bro Day boys, because they were saying, because we were making the analogy of Punk, and because they came out in the press that they were talking about, like, Punk was like, I'm not Hogan, Daniel and Cole aren't Nash and Hall, blah, blah, blah. And Thing was saying that one of the Bro Day was like, at the time, was saying that Punk and Cole were bigger than Nash and Hall going to WCW. I was like, that's just wrong. It's like, they're like, oh no, they come. I said, well, Punk had wrestled for 7 years beforehand, so that's like the anticipation. Yeah, I'll give you that. But Nash had just come off doing a whole program with The Taker and Shawn Michaels. Hall had been putting over like guys left, right, and center in high profile spots before jumping to WCW. Those two moved the needle when they went to that was the biggest thing, and the market needle mover. They were a needle movers when they went to WCW Nitro. But it made me think of, because you were talking about comfort matches, like one of my favorite comfort match is a Kevin Nash, Shawn Michaels match from In Your House 7. That is an amazing match. That and Shawn Michaels, Owen Hart from In Your House 6. I love those two matches. I love them. They aren't my favorite matches of all time, but they are ones I can go back. I can switch my brain off and just watch it because they entertain me.
Yeah, absolutely. With that, please, if you like what we're doing here at Making Chicken Salad, please follow us on social media. You can head to all of the Wrestle Radio Australia social media. And as part of that, please send in any questions that you'd like us to answer. We always love to hear from the listeners and, you know, respond to the things you're thinking about international wrestling. So do you want to give those social media handles there, Todd?
Yep. On Facebook, just look up Wrestle Radio Australia. On Instagram and Twitter, we are Wrestle Radio AU.
Fantastic. On top of that, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to Wrestle Radio Australia. YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere that you listen to podcasts, it's free. Hit the subscribe. Especially if you're going to Apple Podcasts, if you can, please give us a rating and a review. If you give us a 5-star review, it really helps us get into the ears of more people. That's massive. Also, head on over to Redbubble, search WRA or Wrestle Radio Australia. You'll find some Wrestle Radio Australia merchandise there, with the profits going to Beyond Blue and Gotcha for Life, which are fantastic charities. And you also get to represent that you're supporting Wrestle Radio Australia. So that's fantastic. Anything else that I know that there's a couple of shirts that you're going to have going up soon, Todd, with maybe a shirt with some Making Chicken Salad Out of Chicken Shit written on it. So keep your eyes out for that. If you like the show, but also if you're a fan of those classic wrestling phrases, I think Todd's doing some of that. Yeah. Anything else that I've missed there, Todd?
No, I just want to give a quick shout out to one of the wrestlers up here. One of my mates, CJ, is in the hospital at the moment. I just want to give a shout out to him, mate. All the best. Hope you come out of this as strong as you possibly can, mate. Just thinking about you. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, yeah. Keep them in mind. Awesome. Well, thanks as always for your time, Todd. It's always a pleasure doing this with you. And thanks for doing it on an off week so that we could cover this big event that's happened.
No, thank you. Thank you. Because originally behind the scenes, guys, when we first started doing this, he was just like, I could probably do one every 2 weeks. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. That's what I want to do. So to do one this week, thank you so much, mate. It's great.
That's all right. I'm getting back to work in a second, so always more stuff to do. Couldn't wait this week. Had to talk about all the huge stuff that's going on.
Yeah, well, if we didn't do one this week and we did one like the next week, like normally it'd do, be
4 hours long.
Exactly right.
Awesome. So thanks everyone so much for listening. For Todd Eastman, I'm Lachlan Albert. Have a good one.